debate. It's a lost art form, especially in regards to soccer during the internet age. This is why the First 11 exists. The First 11 pits pseudo-soccer journalists against each other in a battle for the ages. Here, the week's arbitrarily named top 11 American soccer issues are laid out. Our panelists pick a side and debate ensues. There are no winners. There are no losers. There are no points awarded. There is just reverently irreverent discourse over primarily ridiculous topics that deserve our discussion, or at least rambling opinions of the otherwise ignored. So prepare to be simultaneously amused and aggrieved. This is the First 11. Welcome to episode 27 of the First 11 podcast. I am Abram Chamberlain coming to you with Evan Ream, who is live in Milwaukee, I think.
Yes, I am in, technically I am in Wauwatosa, Milwaukee. I just got back from a free outdoor concert with $5 Miller High Lifes. So that was a thing, I guess. Yeah, I'm staying out over here at my brother's house to watch big party for the World Cup final on Sunday, which may or may not have happened, which means everyone may or may not be celebrating or disappointed over Argentina's victory on Sunday.
So I got a question for you. Is it the World Cup finals final or the World Cup finals championship game? I've been trying to figure out how to say it so I can sound pretentious.
Well, okay, if you sound pretentious, you just say it's the World Cup final. A lot of people will say, like, World Cup finals, which of course means just the regular tournament, but some people still say, oh, the World Cup finals, even though there's only one game, which makes it singular. It's the NBA finals. It's the World Cup final.
But this mini tournament that's been going over the month is called the World Cup finals, so shouldn't it be the World Cup finals final?
I mean, if you want to be a giant rolling dickbag, then yeah, I guess.
All right, on that, let's jump in.
Number one.
At the end of the U.S.-Belgium game, when all hope was lost with about 12 or so minutes to go, Julian Green scored, undoubtedly, the goal of the tournament. Number one on our First 11 says, Julian Green's goal. And this was submitted by Seth Maycomber.
I disagree. And the reason why I say this is because, first of all, it wasn't the best goal of the tournament. It wasn't even the best U.S. goal. It wasn't even in the top two U.S. goals. Clint Dempsey's and Jermaine Jones were both better. And you know what? Julian Green mishit that ball. No one is talking about this, but the way it comes off his foot, he was not trying to hit it up. The ball should not have had backspin on it. It should have gone straight. He mishit it. He scored. It was a cool goal. Julian Green is not ready to play, not ready to start on the U.S. national team. Hopefully he can get some club minutes, but we should be excited about Julian Green, but everyone should contain that excitement, because until he starts playing games for a club team, until he starts making impact appearances for the United States, we don't know if this guy is actually going to pan out or not. And yes, he mishit that ball.
Wait a minute. Whoa. All right, until he gets regular minutes, until he has meaningful minutes for the U.S. men's national team, are you telling me that those 15 to 20 minutes weren't meaningful? I completely agree with Julian's Green goal. I do have to say that I am a titbit disappointed, because what I was really hoping for after that goal went in, and it was less so, you know, the U.S. comeback or anything like that, I wanted the hype wagon to explode. I wanted everyone to forget about the name Freddie Adu and Charlie Davies and Clint Mathis and anyone else who had even a little bit of hype going behind them. I wanted the hype wagon to blow up to a level unseen before. That goal, Evan, was not only the greatest American goal in that tournament, it was the greatest American goal in the history of American goals. There has never been an American goal that well taken, well scored, or well timed than that goal. Because whether you know it or are willing to admit it or not now, Evan, Julian Green is the greatest player to ever suit up. I'm sorry, I can't get this out. Yeah, I disagree too.
Number two.
Another young player for the United States who had a good tournament was one DeAndre Yedlin, who has a hater on the All-American Soccer Podcast Network, that hater being Jake Cantonese, Yeah, that player, DeAndre Yedlin, had an excellent – he played about 90 minutes or so against Belgium, the last 90 minutes, not the first. He played very well against Eden Hazard, who should have – we should note, did not have an amazing tournament. And he was good in substitute appearances at right midfield against Germany and Portugal. And Greg Seltzer has reported, Greg Seltzer of No Short Corners, the best American soccer journalist, not on Twitter, has reported that DeAndre Yedlin is most likely going to sign with Roma, but not go until, I believe, the summer of 2015. Numbers Who on the first 11 says DeAndre Yedlin to Roma would be the biggest first move by an American developed player.
Let's get this straight. The biggest, and I think this is where Evan's going to go when he disagrees with this, would probably be Tim Howard to Manchester United. That's probably the biggest first move by an American developed player. But for an American developed field player, I find it difficult to think of another move that would equal this. Now, I know Roma is not exactly a Manchester United or a Barcelona or, you know, maybe, you know, a Munich or anything like that. I was trying to think of other huge name things, but I'm, you know, tired off of children and you're tired off of alcohol, so they're probably, we're probably equally tired. I can't think of a better first move. Now, Roma would probably not have the name recognition it has in America if not for Michael Bradley, but this is a very good team, and if Roma views him as a right back, he's going to be training with Maicon. Now, we're kind of avoiding that after that drubbing that Germany put on Brazil the other day, but Maicon is one of the better right backs in the world. I still think that DeAndre Yedlin's future is in the right wing. And I think if not for that injury to Fabian Johnson, most people would probably be thinking that too. But as far as a field player goes, going to a team that is probably going to be definitely in the Champions League at this point for next year, that's going to be big, even if it is with him being loaned out to Seattle for the rest of this season and then being loaned out to maybe Genoa at the beginning of next season.
Look, it would be big. It would be huge. And DeAndre Yedlin, happy birthday today. Happy 21st. I hope you don't get too wasted. It would be a big move. The thing I just have is the issue is that the statement says developed player. And DeAndre Yedlin, for me, is not a developed player. And yes, I didn't even consider the Tim Howard move because I don't think at this point the United States has world-class goalkeepers. There's nothing wrong with the development of goalkeepers in the United States. The United States needs to develop field players better, and this would be a huge move. But DeAndre Yedlin is not a developed player. He is very fast, and that's about it so far. His tactical awareness is not great. He has decent touch, but his decision-making and tactical awareness have not actually developed, and it would be great for him to go to a place like Italy where he could take, you know, his good touch and his great physical skills and put them to test under, you know, a great player like Maicon. Not only Maicon, but Ashley Cole just went to Roma as well, and though they wouldn't be playing the same position, that is a couple of great outside backs to learn from. And the fact that a team as big as Roma is even interested in a player so young, it just says something about American soccer that should really excite people. I don't know what is going to end up happening, but I know that we haven't seen the last of DeAndre Yedlin on the U.S. national team stage. And at this point, he should probably be penciled, not penned in, but penciled in as the 2018 starting right back.
Do you think we overemphasize the idea? I was thinking of this even as I said it. The idea of this American's going to go play at this club with this player who plays the same position, so that's going to be very good for him. Do you think we overemphasize that sometimes?
Yeah, but I mean, American soccer fans overemphasize everything. Cream their pants when Julian Green scores a goal, and you know, it's like where we don't have not we have 19-year-old players who had one lucky touch in the World Cup and were so excited, whereas, you know, a guy like Julian Green, if you're playing for Germany and Argentina, a team like that, you aren't even considered for the national team until you've had one or two good seasons at the top level in one of the top leagues in the world, whereas guys like DeAndre Yedlin, who, you know, less than 2 years ago was in college playing it, albeit he was playing for Akron, which is a very good place to go to college. But in terms of soccer standards, I have no idea about their academic standards. But there's just still so much of a gap that needs to be bridged before USA is going to be a top soccer nation.
Number three.
So speaking of top soccer nations, or formerly top soccer nations, Julio Cesar. Now, let's be honest. MLS had pinned all their hopes on him. The stories were already written about how MLS keeper, quote-unquote MLS keeper, leads Brazil to World Cup finals, if not win. Our first MLS player to play in a World Cup final. Or, you know, these stories were written, and they were ready to be published. Up until about the 22nd minute of the Brazil-Germany, quote, game, end quote. Now, I was talking with you and Matt before we started recording, and to say that probably about the 15th to the about the 28th minute was the most surreal soccer experience of my life is understating it. There were 5 goals scored in about 15 minutes. My children watched that game with me. Julio Cesar in Germany basically ruined any soccer watching experience for the rest of my children's lives because nothing is ever going to equate to that today. Regardless, number 3 on our first 11 says, somewhere deep in the bowels of MLS headquarters, a fluff piece on Julio Cesar was quietly deleted.
Hold on. Okay. I disagree with this statement. I think there probably already is going to be. Like, imagine Brazil, I mean, they have to win on Saturday. They have to win. They can't get fourth place in this tournament. And I mean, oh my God, that was so crazy. That game was so insane. I was left speechless for probably the first time in my life. And I still think, like, you know, if Julio Cesar comes up big on Saturday, no, maybe Julio Cesar doesn't start. I still think it's going to be, you know, they went far in the tournament. Julio Cesar definitely had something of an impact on the team, whether it was positive or negative. I actually don't think you got to blame the defense more so than the goalkeeper in that game with Germany. I mean, Julio Cesar was forced to come off his line, and then Germany's finishing was just so exquisite and so intelligent that they were passing it into the box, and then other guys were, you know, finishing it when Brazil had 2 guys on the line. They were finishing into the corner, and it was insane. I still think there's going to be some sort of good feeling. It's like, yeah, you know what? USA has never, or MLS has never had a player in the semifinals of a World Cup before, albeit not to mention a player who was starting and making legitimate contributions for a favorite. And yeah, it's a goalkeeper, and yeah, MLS has very good goalkeeping, but there's still going to be a piece somewhere about his tournament.
Julio Cesar was probably the third best player throughout this tournament for Brazil. Neymar obviously being the first, and after that Germany game, it's pretty clear that James Silva was the second most important player. MLS is going to back away from this player, at least for a little bit. As of this moment, he is a QPR player on loan to MLS. He is no longer an MLS goalkeeper. There were absolutely dozens of stories, thousands of words written up about how this MLS keeper, and look, this shows MLS is a good league. But as soon as that 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th goal went in, somewhere Simon Borg or Greg Lawless or Matt Doyle or any one of 100 MLS journalists just said, you know what, we're going to erase this. And I think if it was a 3-0 game or a 2-0 game or definitely a 1-0 game, it still would have come out. And the honest to God truth is, as you said, most of those goals, actually, I'd go pretty much all of those goals were not his fault. There were goals that should have happened that he either came out and made himself big or stayed on the line and made a great save for. That game could have easily been 11, 12, or 13 to nothing if not for him and if not for the fact that Mesut Ozil, or however the hell you say his name, is not good for the German national team. Because the fact of the matter is, Julio Cesar did not play as poorly as that scoreline would indicate. As you said, his backline left him out to dry. They backed up. Do you know how many offsides were called against Germany in that game? 0. There were 0 offside calls against Germany in that game. That sort of shows you how deep back that backline was playing, because they were mortified after the 5th goal of being the one to let in that 6th or 7th. So I do think that a fluff piece or two about Julio Cesar was deleted. that doesn't mean they're not still going to try to ride that pony into some sort of relevance.
When Brazil hosts the World Cup in 2050, again, which loss do you think is going to be more over portrayed by the media? 1950 final, well, pseudo final, or 2014 semifinal? Deep pantsing. I didn't have another word for how hard Germany dominated Brazil.
I don't even know. I don't even know. It could be either one, but I think this one, because it'll be fresher in the mind. Random aside, this is going to be a very long podcast because I haven't talked to Evan in 2 weeks. Did you see the thing that Pornhub tweeted out?
Yeah.
All right, for those of you who don't know, Pornhub, which is a website which neither Evan or I has ever frequented, tweeted out something along the lines of, please stop uploading highlights of Germany, Brazil. We have enough public humiliation on this site.
Whoever this thought of that idea to do that is an absolute genius, because that's hilarious.
Number four.
All right. Speaking of poor segues, Alexi Lawless called out Jeff Cameron, who admittedly had somewhat of a poor tournament again in pretty much every game except for probably the Ghana game. He wasn't necessarily up to standards. I thought he was good against Ghana. Here's Abram shaking his head, but
I thought he was good against Belgium.
Was that?
I thought he was good against Belgium.
Whatever. Anyway, Jeff Cameron came out and was criticized by Alexi Lawless on the show, and Jeff Cameron tweeted about something about, you know, something really petty, I guess, towards Alexi Lawless, and I don't know the exact details of it. I just know that it happened. Number four on the first 11 says, Jeff Cameron needs to put on his big boy panties and take Alexi Lawless's analysis for what it was. Analysis.
It's tough, because Alexi Lawless right now is the epitome of everything that's wrong with American soccer, according to everyone on Twitter. This is very hilarious animated short going around with him and Michael Ballack. I don't know if you've seen that yet. If not, go check it out, people. I tweeted it. I think Evan retweeted it, and I'm sure I'll tweet it out again later because it's funny. I'm going to say something which is pseudo-controversial. Jeff Cameron is twice the player that Alexi Lawless ever was. He is. Technically more sound, tactically more astute, better physical specimen. And I know that Alexi Lawless, for his time, and I'm doing that compare across generation thing, which isn't fair. The other reason why this is hard for me to agree with is because I'm not supposed to agree with it, even though I do. So take it away, Evan.
Look, I agree with this. I mean, like, if Alexi Lawless is supposed to, and obviously the people who are on ESPN are not all journalists. There are some journalists, and then you have guys like Alexi Lawless is not a journalist. Michael Ballack's not a journalist. Ruud van Nistelrooy is not a journalist. And yes, that video was hilarious. And the portrayal of Alexi Lawless was actually fairly accurate for just saying stupid, stupid shit. And just because, but at the same time, Alexi Lawless is right, and he absolutely should call out the U.S. team. I mean, what is the point of being an analyst if you're just going to be, oh my God, USA, 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 and like be a huge fan? I mean, what's the point? No, Alexi Lawless is delivering the truth. And if Jeff Cameron, look, I studied media ethics very very hard. That was my favorite class in college, and I love to discuss things about it. As a media member, that is what Alexi Lawless is paid to do. As a professional athlete, Jeff Cameron is a public persona. He chose to make himself a public persona. Therefore, he is open to criticism as a public persona. Alexi Lawless did exactly what he should have done, and he was exactly correct in saying what he did. I have absolutely no problem with this. Jeff Cameron, if you can't handle the criticism, retire and go into hiding somewhere, because that is the way things work, and there's nothing wrong with calling out someone who does a bad job. It doesn't mean Jeff Cameron's a bad person. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with him as a person. It just means he didn't have a good game or a good couple games as a soccer player. And you know what? At the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with that.
And we've discussed this on here before. You actually swayed my opinion. I think it was when we were talking about Michael Bradley, which is why it's hard now for me to disagree, or excuse me, to agree with this one, is that idea of, if you want your players to get better, then they need to, you know, I can't think of the term, but they need to be tougher. They need to take the criticism for what it is. This was, I mean, it wasn't especially constructive because it's coming from Alexi, but it was warranted criticism and it was a warranted analysis. And it's what, as you said, it's what he paid to do. Put on your big boy panties, Jeff Cameron. Stop whining about it. Take it for what it is.
Well, our players need more criticism in, you know, I just hopefully it doesn't get to the point where it's England, where everyone's scared to do everything when they're playing in a national team jersey.
All right. So we're going to head into our break. And when we come back, a little more U.S. men's national team, little Jurgen Klinsmann, a little of our favorite player in the world, Dom Dwyer, and the idea of Sporting Kansas City maybe possibly selling players. I can't afford to not record, so I call my near crisis, tell them hit the boards. Then I call Tay, put the pedal to the floor. Before we do the shop, gotta stop by the store. I'm on my knees, gotta go to the Lord. Dear Father, I pray to you these things ain't gonna pay for it. All them times that I win, ignore it. So what, it wasn't 20, but still I scored. My heart still scorned and my mind is focused. So this serves as a warning to protest. Any verse dispersed is sicker than the first. And I'm about a little trap, trap, trap. I'm about a little trap in all of these nerves. You can find the Rebel Alliance podcast on the internet, iTunes, or Stitcher Radio. Es una trampa. Part of the All-American Soccer Podcast Network.
The Rebel Alliance podcast. Oh no, it's a trap! Put yourself between a bullet and a target, and it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. What you've done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target.
So welcome back from the break. This is the First 11 Podcast. I am Abram Chamberlain. That is Evan Ream, who is, you know, he's still sitting up. So that's, good for you, Evan.
Number five.
Towards the end of regular time in the Belgium-America game, one striker who was brought to the United States men's national team and brought down to Brazil for no reason other than to poach a goal when we needed it, missed. Essentially, he stood wide open with nothing but the goal mouth in front of him. And instead of locking his ankle and burying the shot, Mr. Chris Wondolowski sent the ball high and wide. Number five on our First 11 says, the only thing stopping Chris Wondolowski from being an American hero was an extra W.
Disagree. And to quote one of my friends, or to paraphrase one of my friends on a different topic of which he said this, Chris Wondolowski is a poor man's version of Filippo Inzaghi, who is a poor man's version of a good soccer player. And Chris Wondolowski, good MLS player, fine human being, but when a guy like Chris Wondolowski is playing important minutes for your national team, your national team hasn't made it yet. And I mean, yeah, maybe so a guy like Josie or Aaron Johansson or whatever misses that chance, but there is more holding him back than that extra W. Chris Wondolowski, good poacher, but that's about it. USA should be at the point where they're expecting their forwards to do more than score the odd goal off of a tap. And yeah, it's great that Chris Wondolowski, he's very good off the ball. He gets a lot of chances, but sometimes he misses. And you need a player like a Josie Altidore, but possibly a Josie Altidore who's better, who can also hold up the ball, who can also distribute it, who's a good passer. And Chris Wondolowski is not any of those things on the international level. I think it's telling that a guy like Chris Wondolowski was able to make this squad because he's in the mold of, you know, like a Miroslav Klose, like a Filippo Inzaghi, but not nearly as good.
I want to point something out, and Wondolowski is, I feel bad for him. I know he wakes up every morning and thinks about that. I know that's going to haunt him for the rest of his life. And I know no matter how many goals he goes on to score for the rest of his MLS career, everyone's going to look back and be like, that's the guy who missed that sitter, which it really wasn't a sitter, against Belgium that could have put the U.S. just as far as it's ever been in the modern era before getting destroyed by Argentina. But I want to think about one thing about Chris Wondolowski. Chris Wondolowski never started for the U.S. men's national team. Robbie Finley did. In a World Cup. Chris Wondolowski is 5 times, 6 times, 7 times, maybe even 8 times the player that Robbie Finley is. He's better than Robbie Finley on several levels. So the fact that he came off the bench and never started shows the progress of this national team. As you said, maybe he still shouldn't be playing, but at least he's no longer starting.
Look, we don't talk about a few things. Those things are John O'Brien, Stuart Holden, and Robbie Finley. How dare you? How dare you, sir? By the way, one of those things is not like the other.
Number six.
Something happened in the news, and Jurgen Klinsmann allegedly said something about MLS. I don't really know too much about it because I haven't been keeping up with the news. But, you know, from what he has said in the past, you know, he has criticized MLS for not being a high standard. He criticized players like Michael Bradley and Clint Dempsey for coming back to MLS when, you know, they could have possibly still been playing in Europe. So I'm assuming that is something along the same lines as that. Number six on the first 11 says Jurgen Klinsmann is going after MLS again. This will have no bearing on the upcoming collective bargaining agreement negotiations.
I like the fact, and as we all know, my favorite storyline for next year, no matter what happens, is going to be the collective bargaining agreement and the offseason. I don't know. I want to say that this will not, but it just might. Jurgen Klinsmann is the one person out there with any sort of bearing on U.S. soccer that's sort of pushing buttons and sort of calling MLS out. And this is not Ted calling out MLS. This is the coach of the national team. This is the man who we sometimes forget. There's a great article out there on Sports Illustrated. I wish I had remembered the thing about him working as far as overhauling the Bundesliga. Now, let's be honest, MLS, not close to what the Bundesliga was in 2003 or so when Klinsmann came in and sort of took over and helped revamp the entire German Federation to get them where they are now. But there are problems with MLS, whether you want to say it or not. A lot of that has to come down to salary and when the games are played and how the games are played and the pressure that the players play under and the quality of players and how are we going to build a system for the future if the academies are not run the same way. There are problems in MLS, and a lot of that will come down to money and the speed of the game and things like that. And I really hope that Jurgen Klinsmann comes in and does something for MLS, which is by is going after MLS during this collective bargaining agreement that's coming up next season. Or excuse me, at the end of this season.
And I agree with what you just said. For those of you who don't remember, Germany won, got third place in the 2006 World Cup. And that's, you know, they were hosting it. That's to be expected. But what those of you, what people don't remember is that that German squad was not good. They had Michael Ballack, Philipp Lahm, young Bastian Schweinsteiger. They had a bad team. David Odonker was getting minutes for that team. David Odonker currently plays in the second or third division. I believe he's only 28 or 29. And he was just fast. That was all. They did not have a lot of talent, and yet they got all the way to the third place game. Now, when Jurgen Klinsmann took over the national team in the German national team in 2004, that was coming off of they didn't get out of the group stage in the Euro 2004. They didn't get out of the group stage in Euro 2000. They made the final of the 2002 FIFA World Cup, but these are the teams they played en route to doing it: Saudi Arabia, Cameroon, Ireland, round of 16, Paraguay. The quarterfinals, they played USA. In the semifinals, they played South Korea. They did not play a single team in 6 games. The 7th game, they played Brazil and got their asses handed to them. They got so lucky by their side of the, by their bracket. That team was not good. It was Oliver Kahn making saves, standing on his head, playing a bunch of crappy teams. Now, when Jurgen Klinsmann took over the team in 2004, he revamped the entire Bundesliga youth system, the way that players were developed in the German Bundesliga. He should absolutely do that same thing for the United States, and I believe that's what his position as I think he's the technical director now or something like that, has has given him the power to do, and that's absolutely something he should do. That's something he knows. Yeah, everyone could say Jurgen Klinsmann doesn't know anything about tactics. That could be true or not, but he clearly knows a lot about developing young players, because you look like the German team right now, and those players were developed from the system that Klinsmann brought in. And Germany has been enormously successful. Third place in 2006, Euro 2008, second place, 2010, third place, Euro 2012, they were losing semifinalists. There's no third place game. And now they're in the final. That's mostly because of Jurgen Klinsmann. And he should absolutely do the same thing. And at the same time, there's no way that the league is going to lock out, especially with all the, infrastructure they have towards next year, and New York City FC and Orlando City. But what I really want to see is, player salaries rising, and I really hope that Clint Dempsey and Michael Bradley are able to serve as precedents for the rising salaries of American players. And furthermore, there should be a fourth designated player spot that should be allocated to only American players.
I want to make one correction to something you said about 2002. You said that Germany played only crappy teams on their way to the final. I think you meant crappy teams and the USA.
Look, they were all bad teams. I mean,
and the USA.
Okay, they didn't.
How dare you?
Okay, they didn't play a top tier team until the final.
And the USA. How dare you, sir?
Shut up. Just go to the next topic.
Number seven.
The best listener out there, better than any of you other listeners. Sorry, Dom Dwyer scored. I actually want to say, somewhat of an embarrassing goal, because, golly, I don't know who he took the ball off of, but that was embarrassing. That was grade school level, you know, ball control by that defender who just got literally stripped and pushed off the ball by Dom Dwyer. That was embarrassing. So I'm going to dwell on it a little more. That defender's lucky I don't know who his name is, because I would call him out. But either way, Dom Dwyer stole the ball, came in, scored a, you know, halfway decent goal. But the goal is not so much the goal, but the celebration. Ran over to the side, got a phone from someone, took a selfie with the fans, and was yellow carded. Whatever. I thought it was fun. It got him some publicity. It got them talking about it on ESPN, on Around the Horn. It was featured on Sports Nation. It was sort of out there. It was entertaining. It was interesting. It was the sort of things that MLS sort of, really not just MLS, but any sort of sports league needs. Number 7 on our first 11 says, Dom Dwyer's selfie, for which he received a yellow card, will eventually be featured on an MLS advertisement. And this is from @CincySporting.
Yeah, @CincySporting. He's a good follow. So definitely make sure to check him out. But really quick, may I tell you my favorite ever, my two favorite ever MLS goal celebrations?
I'm going to assume one of them is the Red Bull.
No.
Really?
No. No, okay, that was sorry, good, go. but we progressed so much since then. And this is, no one remembers this. Hercules Gomez, when he was playing for Colorado Rapids, scored. He was at one point, I believe, leading the league in goals in like 4 weeks into like 2007 or something like that. And Hercules Gomez for Colorado Rapids scores, and this was right before he tore his ACL, unfortunately. He scored a goal in like an empty Dick's Sporting Goods stadium, right? Dick's Sporting Goods Park. And he hops up, gets into the stands, and just he sits in the first row, sits down, and puts his hands above his head, on the back of his head, and puts his two legs up on, and just like he's chilling, just like he's chilling on the side. And that was awesome. And I just thought of a third favorite celebration. Tony Chani in Toronto, on a yellow card, jumps into the stands, gets a second yellow card, gets sent off. Now, the all-time best MLS celebration, Eric Ostley, this goes out to you, and I believe he scored on a penalty kick as well. On a yellow card, scores on a penalty kick, takes his shirt off, but he has another shirt on. He has two shirts on, so he put two shirts on just so if he scored, he could take his shirt off and have another shirt on, because that's funny, I guess. He takes his shirt off, still gets a yellow, gets sent off. By the way, that celebration happened in the 2002 Uruguay versus Senegal game in the group stage. Some dude had two shirts on in the World Cup, and that was before you could get a yellow card for taking your shirt off. This Dom Dwyer celebration was awesome. Hopefully it didn't set a legal precedent our country is big on legal precedents, and hopefully it didn't set one that means that if you take a selfie, you get a yellow card. It was awesome. You should totally use it in an advertisement. But I wonder if you know how MLS fans, they use the fans as advertisements all the time, and the fans always complain about getting exploited. I wonder if that will happen too. And right before you go, I just need to. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, it's absolutely going to be used as an advertisement. There's no reason why it shouldn't be. It's a great celebration. It's a wonderful celebration. Now, should it have been yellow carded? That's debatable. He wasn't carrying the phone on him. He didn't technically leave the field. Well, I guess he did sort of leave the pitch, but he's not like he jumped up into the stands. I was surprised when it was yellow carded. There's no question that they're going to use that in some sort of advertising or marketing campaign at some point or another. Now, the question is, I'm not sure you can really say he's being exploited, but what you can say is that why are you going to show off someone who was punished for this? There's no way to disagree with this, because I would be utterly shocked if they didn't use that for some sort of marketing tool.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's as someone tweeted out today, it was a picture of Drew Carey. It was a meme of Drew Carey on The Price is Right. He said, or not The Price is Right, sorry, Whose Line Is Anyway? And it said, MLS, where the rules are made up and the winner doesn't matter. Because that was his whole famous line on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Number eight.
Moving on to things that do matter. There were two Sporting Kansas City players on the U.S. World Cup team. Both of them saw major minutes. We're, of course, talking about Matt Beisler, who had a very, very, very good tournament, and Graham Zuzi, who I thought played well. A lot of other people did not think he played well, though. Number eight on the first 11 says, before the end of this transfer window, which I believe, is it open?
It just opened on Tuesday.
Just opened on Tuesday. Before the end of this window, Sporting Kansas City will lose either Matt Beisler or Graham Zuzi.
I tend to agree. First reason why I agree is I know, maybe not Graham Zuzi, but there are definitely offers out there right now for Matt Beisler. Sporting Kansas City has shown that they will sell players. No one saw Kai Kamara getting sold last year. No one saw that. That happened, and my head exploded, of course. And, you know, no one saw, Espinoza getting sold a few years back. No one sees these things coming with Sporting Kansas City. But they have proven time and time again that they are willing to sell their players. I'm not sure Graham Zuzi is going anywhere. I'm one of those people who thought he played fine in the World Cup. Nothing stellar, nothing to probably generate interest. Matt Beisler is gone. I don't think he makes it through this window. All the articles coming out are, for me, saying, oh, we're going to keep both of them. Well, why would he say that? Because he knows they're going to lose one. Or Matt Beisler coming out and saying, it would be my dream to finish spending my career in sport in Kansas City. You know what else might be your dream, Matt Beisler? Getting paid a shit ton of money to play soccer professionally in Germany. One of them is going. Now, neither of them are going to go to a huge league. But one of them is leaving and one of them is getting paid, and Sporting Kansas City will be happy to facilitate that move because they've proven in the past that they're willing to do it.
I disagree with you on a number of statements right there. First of which is you say neither of them is going to a big league. I don't think Graham Zuzi.
A big team, not a big league.
Big team?
Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, that I could definitely agree. Look, Matt Beisler is the player that we all hoped Tim Ream would turn out to be. A smart left-footed center back who distributes the ball fairly well out of the back. And the reason why I think that neither of them are leaving is I think they honestly just love the situation that they're in too much. And yes, everyone has their price, right? But I think if Beisler gets an offer for, say, like, let's say hypothetically Team A, like Aston Villa, right, or whatever, will pay Beisler $1.5 million a year, right? I say that Sporting Kansas City counters and says, you know what, do they even have a designated player? Claudio Baehler. Anyway, Sporting Kansas City would say, you know what, we'll pay you $1 million a year and you get to stay at home and live in Kansas City and play in front of your hometown fans. Matt Beisler says yes to that every time, I believe, every single time. And yeah, Sporting Kansas City, you know, they're somewhat of a, you know, despite the their success on and off the field, they're somewhat of a frugal team. They all sort of are sort of a smaller market, but look, it's just he's a hometown kid. I think he really likes playing there. Both of them do. Both of them really like playing there, and they really like the thing that they have going. I think that if Sporting Kansas City encounters any offer with the right money for both of those players, they will want to stay there and become one, see if they can become an MLS dynasty and an MLS team that, you know, people will hopefully, you know, the fans who are your age, my age now, people will be telling about their kids about when they grow up. You know, one day, yeah, I got to see Matt Beisler and Graham Zusi play, and I got to see this French guy foul the crap out of everyone and get a bunch of yellow cards.
I can't see, and you said the word that I was looking for, which I couldn't think of when I was thinking there, was frugal. This is a frugal team, and you got to go down the list of players in their head, in your head. You've got Aurelien Collin, you've got Benny Failhaber, you've got, or sorry, Fuckface, you've got Dom Dwyer, you've got Graham Zusi, you've got several other players, very good, high-level, highly paid, quote-unquote, highly paid MLS players. They cannot afford to keep them unless something happens with the collective bargaining agreement, which, you know, I do think something's going to happen, but not enough to keep both of them. One of them, or Dom Dwyer, is going to be gone pretty soon, and I really think Matt Beisler is the one who's going to be able to net them the most money, so I think Matt Beisler is the most likely to be gone.
In terms of likelihood of them selling a player, it goes Dom Dwyer, Matt Beisler, Graham Zusi. And Dom Dwyer, the reason why what sets him apart from Matt Beisler is the fact that he has a European passport, which makes it easier for a lot of teams to sign him.
All right, so we are going to head into our break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Teddy Roosevelt. We're going to be talking about AZ Alkmaar. We're going to be talking about Red Bull, though not the one you think, plus a couple reserves. All that and more when we come back to the First 11 podcast brought to you by the good people at the AASB.
Soccer hipsters unite.
From important states like Massachusetts and California to states no one gives a shit about, like New Hampshire and Alabama, a bunch of random guys with varying ratios of fanhood to non-biased journalism gather to talk about soccer, to drink alcoholic beverages, to give each other crap, and most importantly, to wake everyone up to the truth. It's Pick Up Soccer, available on the AASB Network.
All right, welcome back from our break, where Evan and I are discussing the ins and outs of politics. I don't know what the hell we're talking about. Ronald Reagan and Walter Mondale. Don't ask.
Number nine.
Speaking of politics, speaking of a segue, one of the biggest surprises during this World Cup was the outpouring of support for America. I knew there was going to be a lot, but I don't think I realized just how many a lot were. But nothing stood out more than the one man dressed up as Theodore Roosevelt, or in this case, Teddy Roosevelt. Now, there was a shirt for sale. I know I bought a shirt. I wish I was wearing it tonight, but it hasn't come yet, and I'm hoping it's not just a big scam, with Teddy Roosevelt's face on it for, you know, my support of the U.S., and I like knickknacks and stupid T-shirts. If you look at the stands of most American soccer games since about, I want to say the 2011 Gold Cup is when it really started, where American Outlaws decided more so than just the bandanas and the T-shirts, people were going to dress up as American flags or Quakers or, you know, tri-corner hats or whatever. Either way, we have gone all out in everything from Superman to Captain America to now Theodore Roosevelt and George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and anything else under the sun. Number 9 on our First 11 says, more so than anything, American soccer needs more cosplay.
It's ironic that you brought up Superman because, guys, come on. Superman is not from the United States. He is not American. He is actually an illegal alien. Literally an illegal alien. So, come on, people dressing up as Superman. Batman, totally do it. Although, who knows if where Gotham actually geographically exists. Since you said you're agreeing with it, I just wanted to bring up the Colorado Rapids pub crawl when they all dressed up as random things and went out and got drunk after they won the most boring MLS Cup final since the 2005 MLS Cup when Pando Ramirez won it with the only good thing he ever did for the Galaxy. I just wanted to bring that up because that was awesome. So, Abram, go ahead.
Yeah, we need more cosplay. I have no reasoning for it. I am just solely entertained. And I'm going to steal this from, God, I believe it's Mike O'Toole. If you don't follow him on Twitter, he's a great follow. He was talking about how most American soccer games are now a mix of patriotism and Comic-Con. And that's exactly what they are. If you look at the pictures in the stands, it is wholly entertaining. And, you know, I think a lot of us do it and don't even realize it. I know last year when I was going to NPSL games, I wore a tri-corner hat. I don't know why the hell I did it. I just did it. And we, you know, everyone wears bandanas. If you look up at, you know, here's my NGS shout out. If you look up at in Detroit with the Northern Guard, they wear the skull mask. And a lot of it is that. It's that symbolism. It's that getting behind one thing. And it's whether you wear, you know, a tri-corner hat or a skull mask or an American flag bandana, as long as you're not wearing it as a cape, or any of these other things, it draws us together as American soccer fans. It gives us something. And I know I got into it with someone on Twitter about the ideas of, oh, well, it's stupid and no one else does this. But that's not true. If you look at the Cleveland Browns, they have the dog pound where the people wear the bulldog mask. If you look at people dressing up, I can't think of which hockey team it is. There's this group of guys who dress up in all green suits. This is something that is purely American. It's an American thing, this cosplay for sports teams. And I think this shows that American soccer has broken into the mainstream when we do have people showing up. And even to the point of this guy who is dressing up as Teddy Roosevelt, he has a little bit of a cult following now. That's cool. That's something that shows a progress of American soccer. I think we need more of that. I think the diehards are what eventually draw people to the game, and bring it on. I don't care what you dress up as long as it's somewhat respectful.
Yeah, obviously people know that I cover Sac Republic FC, and one Sac Republic fan who's in the Tower Bridge Battalion. His name is Casey Barcombe on Twitter. He's at DYCSoccer17. He was in Brazil this last month or so supporting the United States. And he is at every single Sac Republic game. He wears a, there's like this workaholics bear sort of like jacket costume thing, but he wears it because, you know, California or this, our animal is the bear. And so he wears that to Sac Republic games, no matter how hot it gets, no matter how anything it gets, he always wears it. And you know what? It honestly felt, I covered a couple games without him, and it felt like the atmosphere was missing without him. You can always look over and see a bear in the stands, and that's just awesome. I totally agree with that. And not this wasn't cosplay, but he actually he wore a Domino's Pizza Delivery Boy shirt to the U.S. game where they were playing in the, you know, like the Domino's Pizza jerseys, and that was awesome too. It's just the creativity is what's going to, from fans, is what's going to drive this country to the next level in terms of American soccer support. I wholeheartedly believe that. There's some great stuff going on right now. Yeah, I guess we're breaking this show's format, which it seems like we do, you know, all the time. But
we've done it like 3 times this show.
Yeah, sorry, we're selling out.
Number 10.
Speaking of selling out, that's something that Ernie Stewart never did. So, Freddie Adu. I'm pausing to let people laugh. Freddie Adu, how is he? 37? 38?
I think he's 42.
I don't know. He's 40?
He's 42. I think he's 40. I think he's 42.
All right. Well, Freddie Adu is on trial at AZ Alkmaar team, which has provided employment for one Josimar Volmi Altidore and one Aaron Johansson. Freddie Adu is on trial there in the Dutch Eredivisie, and the technical director at AZ Alkmaar is one Ernie Stewart, former U.S. international Ernie Stewart, who grew up in the Netherlands and was the first American serviceman, international, I believe, to play. Now we have a ton. Ernie Stewart taking on Freddie Adu, possibly to see to something, 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 something. Number 10 on the first 11 says that Ernie Stewart is the king of American soccer reclamation projects.
I agree. And a lot of this comes down to two players, because Aaron Johansson is not a reclamation project. Aaron Johansson, this was a natural step in his progression. But Jozy Altidore was basically given away by Villarreal to AZ Alkmaar. He was a lost cause. He goes there, scores, 106 goals, and then is sold on for a good amount of profit before, apparently bombing out in the English Premier League and hopefully getting back to the Eredivisie and scoring 500 other goals once he comes back from this injury. Freddie Adu is probably in a worse position than was Jozy Altidore when he went into AZ Alkmaar. He is out of contract. He burned out of MLS. He was did not have his contract renewed by Bahia in Brazil because he wasn't technical or tactical enough, which is humorous because that's what most people think of when they think of Freddie Adu as a very technical, tactical player, even though that's probably not true. Couldn't catch on, and I apologize. I don't remember if it's Blackpool or Blackburn. Doesn't matter because it was only a publicity stunt that he even went there. The fact that he's getting a shot at AZ Alkmaar. Let's pretend he never gets picked up there and he only goes on this probably 2-week trial. The fact that Ernie Stewart is giving him this trial when no one else in the world is going to give him a realistic trial shows that he's the king of the American Soccer Reclamation Project. I'm pretty sure, not 100% sure, maybe 55% sure, that Freddie Adu is not going to sign with Alkmaar. So that's, better than halfway that this is just something that's not going to happen with him. But if he does, people are already saying that Freddie Adu should have his, get ready to go to Russia in 2018. That's ridiculous. He's not there. He's not ready for it. I had someone going back and forth with someone on the first 11 feed today about the fact that if this was Stuart Holden, then we'd be way more excited and we'd think it was a good deal. Totally different scenario. Maybe we'll talk about that in the postscript of this one. But Ernie Stewart showing Freddie Adu, I guess you could say showing him loyalty and at least giving him a chance, a far more realistic chance than he did to sign on with a championship team, does prove that he is the king of the American Soccer Reclamation Project.
Look, I wouldn't be surprised if Freddie Adu actually made AZ Alkmaar. I think Freddie Adu has a better chance of succeeding in a league like the Dutch Eredivisie than he does in a league like MLS, because in MLS, people play defense. And in the Dutch Eredivisie, everyone plays like Brazil in the 2014 FIFA World Cup semifinal against Germany. And Freddie Adu, I don't know if he would be a starter. I don't know if he would come off the bench. But he's a guy where really the reason why he hasn't made is he doesn't play any defense. He doesn't know how to play defense. Freddie Adu could make it in the Dutch Eredivisie. That being said, I don't think Ernie Stewart has as great of a track record on reclamation projects as does someone like Bruce Arena. Bruce Arena has always gets these old veterans, veteran players, Clint Mathis, Jovan Kravoski, you name it. Bruce Arena gets somebody to contribute at a higher level than they're really capable of, and he does it extremely well. He does it extremely effectively. You could even call David Beckham a reclamation project. I mean, David Beckham was awful for the Galaxy in this first couple of years, and then they started winning championships once Bruce Arena got there. It's not a coincidence. Bruce Arena is, the king of the American Soccer Reclamation Project.
Number 11.
Of the players who did not go to the World Cup, perhaps the one whose name isn't Landon Donovan, that most people were surprised and later, after Jozy went down, disappointed to see not there was Terrence Boyd, who probably wouldn't have missed a sitter in the 88th minute against whatever. It has been confirmed that Terrence Boyd has been sold to Red Bull in Leipzig, which is in the second Bundesliga. Number 11 on our first 11 says, Terrence Boyd to Red Bull would be a bigger move if it were the New York and not the Leipzig affiliate.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Look, Red Bull Leipzig, allegedly, according to Greg Seltzer, is a very ambitious club. So if Red Bull Leipzig is able to get themselves promoted this next year, and by the way, Red Bull Leipzig were the club that scored that, I think it was like 11-second goal by using the blitzkrieg tactic, I guess they called it, where off the kickoff, they kicked it back and threw like 11 guys into the box. Well, not 11 guys, but like 7 guys into the box and played a long ball. And if he can help the team gain promotion, then yes. There, well, then no, I disagree with this. But other than that, I mean, the second Bundesliga, aren't we done with it? When is the time when it's acceptable for second division players? Well, it's not acceptable for second division players to be playing on the U.S. national team. When is the U.S. national team going to improve to a standard where there are no second division players on the team? In 2006, Bobby Comby was playing at Reading, who were in the English Championship, albeit they got promoted, and he started, I believe, all 3 games for the U.S. In 2010, I'm trying to think, but I know there were a couple guys who Spectre. Were on the team. What's that?
Spectre.
Yeah, Spectre. I mean, West Ham in the second. He was at Birmingham State. I don't know. But the point is that when is it acceptable or not acceptable for players who are potential starters in the next cycle for those sort of players to stop moving to second division clubs? And I mean, I just hope that Red Bull Leipzig get promoted, but I mean, the second Bundesliga is most likely not better than MLS.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
it would be big.
But the second Bundesliga is probably better than the Austrian league. And it's definitely better than the fourth Bundesliga, where he was playing when he got his first men's national team cap. So it's a step upwards, isn't it? And I'm sort of messing with you. It's that argument that we were having about Julian Green. It's that idea of, you know, what is good enough. And I have not watched a lot of the second Bundesliga. I'll probably never watch a lot of the second Bundesliga. The only time I ever saw the second Bundesliga is when Edson Buttle was there, and I was still trying to convince myself that he had a spot in the national team. Why? I think it would be a much bigger move if he came to New York. First off, it's New York. Second off, it would show that they still have ambition and they're not just hiding in their shells from NYCFU. But why? Why go to the second Bundesliga? I understand they're probably going to gain promotion and then what? Be relegated the year after? It doesn't seem like a logical move to me.
Oh, look. You say the Austrian Bundesliga, not a great league. Nate Jaquia scored 5 goals in 13 games in the Austrian Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. Nate Jaquia. But that being said, Terrence Boyd was playing in the Europa League. That club had legitimate chance for Champions League soccer every single year.
So would it have been better for him to stay in Austria?
I don't know. I don't care. Red Bull Leipzig, even if they go to the Bundesliga, that team is not making Champions League unless they just influx a ton of cash. It's an East German team, and East Germany is so much more poor than West Germany. I mean, it's still after the reunification. And it's just – I hope that Terrence Boyd doesn't get called up. Just by playing in the second Bundesliga should not be good enough to get called up to the national team. And not because Terrence Boyd isn't a good player, not because he doesn't love playing for his country. It's just only first division players should be considered.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to – I agree with you in theory. I don't think that him playing there is going to cut into his playing time, because I do think even if he is moving to the second Bundesliga, he's moved up in quality.
All right, maybe.
Saying that as someone who's never watched the second Bundesliga. All right, we have 2 reserves this week. First one is from @RevGunner. It says, Germany has every advantage come Sunday. They've played less time, extra rest, and beaming with confidence, which means they will lose.
Look, there's a published article in the Davis Enterprise for me saying that Argentina was going to win the World Cup. Naturally, I have to say yes, Germany is going to lose and Argentina is going to win, because then I'm going to look like a genius.
Yeah, I had a non-published article in my head where I said Germany was going to win the World Cup. So I have to convince the voices in my head that I was right all along. So no, I disagree. They're going to win. All right.
You have voices in your head, Abram?
Always.
That's good. That's awesome.
All right, and the other one is from our buddy @Seth Hunterm, Seth_Hunter. He wants to know, our first half, or in the case of NPSL PDL, our full season surprises. I figure we could pick maybe one or two.
Okay, so biggest
any level on the quote unquote pyramid.
Okay, this is way up there on the pyramid. And my biggest first half surprise was the first half of Brazil against Germany, because Germany scored 5 fucking goals against Brazil, which is absolutely the most insane thing that I've seen in my entire life. My actual first half surprise is I want to go ahead and shout out saying that I've been surprised and disappointed by the Portland Timbers this year. What the hell, Portland? You were supposed to be the best MLS team, and you are sitting in 11th place overall with 21 points from 18 games. They've won 4, lost 5, and drawn 9. What the hell happened to that team?
Right. I had 2 surprises. I am going much lower on the pyramid with you. My biggest surprise was Nashville FC. I have no reason why I thought they were going to be a disaster. 3rd place in the Southeastern Conference. They're playing in the NPSL Southeast playoffs this weekend, so we will see whether or not they can beat the Silverbacks and maybe do anything more than just finish 3rd place in that division, which is one of the tougher divisions in NPSL. My other surprise on the other end of the spectrum is Indy 11. I believe I said that they were going to be a great team. Dead last in the NASL spring season. Dead last. 4 points. 4 points.
They didn't win a game. They're 4 points. Draws, right?
All draws. 4 points.
I actually want to add when I want to say that I've been surprised by Sac Republic FC. I legitimately had a conversation with the fan I talked about earlier, this Casey Barcombe. I asked if they were going to be good, and he said, "Yeah, I think they're going to be good." And you know, in my head, I didn't tell him that time. I didn't think Sac Republic was going to be that good. And you know what? Sac Republic is 9-5-2. So 29 points from 16 games. They're in 4th place right now with a game in hand on Richmond, who has only 3 more points than them. Sacramento has already won the season series against LA Galaxy 2, who is allegedly their biggest rival. And they're pretty much guaranteed to make the playoffs at this point. Obviously, Orlando City's running away with 1st place in USL Pro. But I've been pleasantly surprised by how good Sac Republic has actually turned out to be, and it's actually been a pleasure to cover. And Rodrigo Lopez, their attacking midfielder, is probably in the discussion for player of the season thus far. So a lot of cool stuff coming out of Sacramento right now.
All right, anything to plug this week, Evan?
I had an article I wrote for the Davis Enterprise about nationalism and the complex ideas that are now associated with nationalism in a increasingly globalized world as we are now. What does it mean to be nationalistic, and especially equating to the World Cup? You guys can check that out. It's on davisenterprise.com. I tweeted it out. Abram tweeted it out. I guess we can tweet it out for First 11 Pod. Not sure if there's going to be a World Cup article for this weekend or not yet from me, but we'll see. If there is, I'll definitely put it out there.
Yeah, I want to recommend that article by Evan too. It's actually really good. I also wrote something, surprise surprise, not especially long, for Viva La Football. I'm bringing back the old blog just because sometimes I need more than 140 characters, but I'm not going to ever find and write for anyone because I don't have the time to do that full time anymore. But I wrote an article on there talking about, and nothing that anyone who listens to this hadn't heard before, the idea of moving forward momentum, the Gold Cup, what's important about the Gold Cup, and why that needs to be equated in and folded in with the World Cup. I'm also in the middle of writing something which is taking me a little bit longer. It's a very satirical piece, which Evan and I have talked about, and I will definitely tweet that out when I finish it, probably sometime within the next year. Either way, go ahead and follow Evan. He's at Evan Ream. Go ahead and follow me. I'm at Mind of Abram. Go ahead and follow the podcast. It's at First 11 Pod. Go ahead and follow our network. It's at DAASP. Rate and review us on Stitcher. Rate and review us on iTunes. Like us on Facebook. Facebook.com/All American Soccer Pod. This has been episode 27 of the First 11, and we're sorry. What was that? It was like the 89th minute? I don't know. I'll make up a number. I don't give a shit. right.
Don't make up a number. Like, stupid.
I'll go with late in the game. Will that make you feel better, Evan? I have no journalistic credibility. Go fuck yourself.